This is Good News Chats with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen, and this Good News Chat is with Joe Mascayo. Did you grow up in a Christian family?
Yeah, my dad was an Assembly of God preacher, but it was the Tandon Assemblies. It was affiliated with the Assemblies, but they spoke in Italian. It was for all of the Catholic converts that came from the old country, really. And so they had, and the first church I remember going to was like a storefront up in New York. We used to call them storefronts. I don't know if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, you started a church, and the only place you could find was a store, so you put it in the storefront.
Yeah, right. And, you know, maybe 30, 40 people, and we sang, it was a bilingual service, in Italian and in English, sang songs in Italian and in English, and the preaching was Italian and English. And it was, yeah, it was kind of a strange little thing, but then, so that's what I remember. Then we, of course, moved into we went to an Italian, what was called the Italian Christian Church, and it was a big church. It was very nice, and I was living. My dad, we were living in Albany, New York, at the time. So, anyway, that's it. My dad became, he worked for the government, and then our pastor of our church got killed in an automobile accident. And they used my dad as an interim pastor. And during the time he was interim pastor, he of course studied and became ordained, and in the organization, it was called the Attending Christian Churches of North America. Anyway, and he became ordained. And then they offered him the job, so he quit his job at the government and went to work and took on this church.
How did you become a Christian?
Well, I became a Christian, of course. I was brought up in this home with mom and dad were just, oh my goodness, they they were very strict and very Italian and very dedicated Christians. And and so my dad, I became a Christian. Well, let's see, let me say. My dad wanted me to take piano lessons so I could play the piano in church.
Practical.
Yeah, so that's how I got into music. But the real fact is I never played the piano in church. I went off on a tangent. But, yeah, but I was saved and became a Christian in the church, in the church youth group. And I remember when I graduated from high school and I was going to college, the elders of the church, now I don't know if you believe this or not, but I this is what happened, so I'm going to tell you this story. I don't know why, but anyway, the elders of the church made a circle around me, and I stood in the middle, and they were going to pray for me to give me a good send-off to college, you know? And then they told me that I was going to go on to do great things, and I was going to be a musician and well-known around the world, and oh, my goodness gracious. I said, thank you very much.
They prophesied for you, huh?
Yeah, they prophesied, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, that's...
So how did you get from there to doing backup for Elvis and Jimmy Dean?
Well, that's interesting, yeah. Well, you know, I went to school down south in at Florida State. I was going to be a teacher. I was going to be a music teacher. And I was going to school in Tallahassee at Florida State. And one of my classmates was a guy named Virgil Lovett, L-O-V-E-T-T.
Oh, yeah.
And he lived in Bainbridge, Georgia, just over the line from Tallahassee, just over into Georgia from Florida. And he had a quartet of brothers. It was called the Lovett Brothers Quartet. And Virgil was singing tenor and playing the piano. And so we became good friends, and he asked me, he said, how would you like to play the piano for our quartet? And I said, well, I had no idea what that meant because I wasn't familiar with Southern quartet gospel music,
A Northern kid, right?
Yeah, right. So anyway, I listened to a lot of Blackwoods Brothers and Statesman Records. And as a matter of fact, I went to see the Blackwoods and Statesman in Pensacola, Florida. And it convinced me. This probably was, I'm sorry to show my age here, but this was probably in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they convinced me to, and that convinced me to get into the business. And so I was offered a job by a professional group out of Atlanta, Georgia, called the Harmoniers.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, the Harmoniers were older gentlemen, and I was only 19 years old, and I played the piano for them. And while I was with them, I wrote a book, and I tell the story in the book. What there was in Memphis, Tennessee, every year there was a big convention called the Quartet Convention.
Right, still going on.
It goes on now up in Louisville. I think it moved, but it started out in Memphis with the Blackwood Brothers down in Memphis, and so the Harmoniers were booked to sing there. And it was in Memphis, Tennessee, like I think 1960. And all of a sudden, the rumor goes around, Elvis is coming in tonight. Oh, no kidding. And I couldn't believe it, And so I hung around. We sang early that night, the group did. And, probably, 8:30, 9 o'clock. Elvis didn't show up till probably 11 o'clock, but I hung around. The other guys went back to the hotel and left. They didn't care about seeing Elvis. But I did. I had never seen the guy. Sure enough, about, between 11 and midnight, he comes in the stage door, the back door, with his entourage. And, wow, and the buzz back there was just unbelievable. And the people gathered around, and they, everybody wanted to see him or take his picture. And back in those days, it was flash bulbs. There was like a little cube that you plugged into the top of the camera. You're showing your age, man. You better watch out. And you took a picture, and it rotated, and it made a big flash. Anyway, so everybody was lining up, and I finally made my way up there to him, and I was a nervous wreck. And I said to him, "Hey, Elvis, my name is Joe Mascalo, and I'd like to get your autograph from my mother." Oh my goodness gracious! He said, "Oh, I know who you are. You play for the Harmoniers," and he was a really great student of gospel music. He knew all the groups, he knew all the personnel, he knew their repertoire, he knew the songs, he knew what parts. He was really a student of gospel, Southern gospel music.
Well, Elvis grew up on that music, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and it's really amazing the knowledge he had. So anyway, we talked for a little while, and he said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you my autograph if you give me your autograph." That was very nice of him. He was trying to make me comfortable. He knew I was nervous. And it did. But then we struck up a good friendship over the years. And then I went from the Harmoniers to a group in Knoxville called the Prophets Quartet.
Oh, yeah.
And then from the Prophets Quartet, Jake Hess called me had to play for the Imperials and to sing and play.
That's when Henry Slaughter left.
Yes, right, when Henry Slaughter left. And so that was, I would think it was within the first year. I think Henry left and Cheryl Nielsen mm-hmm. left. And then
Jim Murray came
and I came. And so that then
was a
it
great
was,
quartet.
Yeah, it was Jim Murray and Jake, Gary McSpadden, Armand, mm-hmm. and me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Jake is having health problems, yep. so he was going to quit the group, and Gary quit. So that's when we hired Terry Blackwood and a guy from San Diego named Roger Wiles. And when Jake left the group, it was awful, Ken. He when he left, because it was called Jake Hess and the Imperials.
That's true.
Yeah, and when he left, we had 93 dates canceled.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so we were just starving to death.
Wow.
It was awful, yeah.
He was, and, he formed the group, and he was the center of it.
Yeah, he was. He was really, it was his personality, his group, his style, just everything about
yeah.
it. And so we tried to carry on for a while, you know, without him, but it just, so we went the contemporary route, you know, which at the time was really catching on in California
mm-hmm.
with, yeah, you know, with Andre Crouch and Second Chapter of Acts
right.
and Love Song and Larry Norman and people like that. So we, you know, we kind of changed. We left our mohair suits in the closet, and we
radically changed your sound.
Yeah, we changed our sound and our look. We went more contemporary, what we called at the
mm-hmm.
time, and you know, that's the style we developed, and it was very successful for us. And Elvis, just before Jake left. Elvis did a gospel album, and it was called the How Great Thou Art album. And he wanted to do a new concept with a choir.
Yeah.
So instead of having a choir behind him, they hired the Jordanaires and the Imperials and three female vocalists.
That's a great choir.
Yeah, and then they doubled it, what they called, they stacked it or doubled it. So instead of 11 people, now you got 22, or you got 33,
mm-hmm.
depending on, or whatever. And so you kept doubling it or stacking it until you got the sound you wanted, and that's what he used on the record. Well, that was our first introduction to Elvis, and Elvis never forgot that, really. He was a very loyal kind of guy, and when it was time for him to go to Las Vegas in 1969... He opened in Las Vegas at the International Hotel for 30 days, and he called the Jordanaires, and they wouldn't go.
Hmm.
No, Gordon Stoker told me, well, you know, we weighed the whole situation, but we talked it over and decided that we didn't want to go because if it was just a one-time shot, we had to leave all our session work behind. And so it was a business decision
yeah.
we made. So the second call Elvis had was to us. we were his second choice.
And you said yes.
And I came a long way, Ken. I hope you don't mind, but that's exactly how we got involved with Elvis. He called us after the Jordanaires turned him down, and we went to Vegas. And really, the rest is history. We're still doing a lot of Elvis Presley-related fan
mm-hmm.
club events around the world.
Do you have a favorite Elvis story?
Oh, I have a lot of favorite Elvis stories. I could tell you some. We were in Las Vegas last week for a reunion at the Hilton, the Las Vegas Hilton, and that's the hotel that we started at in 1969. And it was 42 years ago that we were there with Elvis. But anyway, they were giving tours of the backstage area and the dressing room area and the penthouse where he stayed upstairs, and of course the showroom. So anyway, I had a bunch of fans there, and we were down in the dressing room. And I said, this is the dressing room where I made a fool of myself. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, let me tell you what happened. So after every engagement, or during the engagement, Elvis would come across from his dressing room across the hallway to our dressing room. And he was usually with Priscilla, his wife at the time. And they would give us a gift, and it was usually a bracelet, a gold bracelet, or a gold wristwatch, or, you know, he was very, very generous, but it was always very expensive, you know, gold something. So this one time, he brought over some watches that he had made. I think he only made 75 of them, and it had his name around the bezel of the watch. It said Elvis Presley, and underneath it had 5 stars. And it was something new at that time. It was self-winding. So you had to shake it, you know. And
twist your arm to make it tighten the spring.
Yeah, so anyway, long story short, my watch never did run. And I had it for 2 or 3 days, and I'd hit it and shake it and rattle it and do everything I could do, but it just wouldn't run. So here we are down in the dressing room, and I said to the guys, okay, I'm going over there and tell him that I want another watch and mine doesn't work. How embarrassing is that? And they just laughed, you know, they thought that was, no, you're not going to do that. I said, yes, I am. So I storm out of the dressing room, Ken, and I walk across the hall, and I knock on the door, and some of his guys answer the door. I said, is he, and I need to talk to him, please. He said, yeah, he's in there getting ready. And so they opened the door to where he was sitting in front of a mirror, and somebody was fixing his hair. And he was getting ready to get dressed for the show that night. And I said, E, I need to. I said, E, I want to say thank you very much for the watch. But the only problem is I can't get mine to run. I've had it for 3 days. It just won't run. And he never missed any. He never missed a beat. And he said, I just give them away. I don't fix them. And so all the guys heard that, and they thought that was a riot. And I felt like I was crawling out of the dressing room at that point. So I showed the people where all that took place, and they just thought that was the funniest thing. But, yeah, it was an embarrassing moment for me. But anyway, and I still have the watch, and it still doesn't work.
I've talked to Bill Bays, who was with Elvis, and he drank orange juice. And Donnie Sumner, who was with Elvis, and he drank a bunch of other stuff and took drugs. So I got two sides of this. So you get to be the tie here. What impact did being with Elvis have on your being a Christian?
Well, you know what? Let me tell you what impact it's had on me. As I get older and... next week will be my 74th birthday, so it tells you I'm an older man. And I'm an older Christian man, and I'm an American older Christian man. And I'm proud of all those things. But the thing that impressed me about Elvis was his music and the impact of his music on people. Mm-hmm. I can tell you right now that we travel the world and do events around the world probably 50 days a year. And the highlight of these concerts are when we sing Sweet Spirit. There's a sweet, sweet spirit in this place, a cappella. And when we sing How Great Thou Art. And to me, Elvis has given us a ministry to sing gospel music to a secular audience and has opened these doors for us. And next year will be the 35th year of his death. In 2012, he will have been dead 35 years. And just imagine that his legacy and his ministry is still going on because he's prepared the way for us and opened the doors, And God has given us this talent that we still can walk through these doors and minister through our music to secular audiences around the world. I think that's a great thing, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful thing, and I feel very fortunate to be part of it. I really do. Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, probably not.
well, it's a good story.
It was. It's an excellent story.
Thanks.
Was it hard to be a Christian, both as being in the secular part and even being a professional gospel singer?
Not for me, really. I never drank. I never did drugs. I never smoked. I mean, I know a lot of guys got caught up in all of that, but I never did that. I've been married. I've been married most of my life, and I've got, grown children and grandchildren, and I even have two great-grandchildren. But I mean, I have a lot of family around me all the time, and I think that's pretty much what kept me straight.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, I watched so many guys, and maybe God gave me the strength by giving me examples around me of what can happen. But I saw so many guys lose their family and lose their money and lose their health
mm-hmm.
because of bad habits. And I don't know whether I was too vain or whatever, but I never just chose to do any of those things. I stayed pretty close, and thank God I did. And I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed. I have good health, and my family is wonderful, and I'm just enjoying my old age. Yeah.
What has surprised you about being a Christian?
I don't know that anything has surprised me, because to tell you the truth, I was brought up in a Christian home, and I don't think my father was very. As I said, my father, believed in prayer. He believed in, we hugged a lot. We held hands a lot. And nothing really is surprising other than the fact that why do people resist being a Christian? I think that's what the surprising part. It seems so obvious to me.
mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
Was there a godly person who greatly impacted your life?
Not really, other than my dad. Other than my dad, there really wasn't. A couple of weeks ago, we were up at the Billy Graham Library in Charlotte, North Carolina. We were part of a Bill Gaither homecoming video that took place on the grounds there under a big tent. Like a tent revival.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw George Beverly Shea. He was in a wheelchair. He's 102 years old.
Oh, my.
Yeah, George Beverly Shea and Cliff Barrows. And Billy Graham is in, he was in ungood health, but
yeah.
They went to visit him. But you could say that there are so many evangelists and wonderful people that you've met throughout the years. But I honestly, my dad was as much an influence on me and my way of life than as anybody.
We'll have more with Joe right after these announcements. Today's good news announcement is from Romans chapter 12. Through the grace of God, we all have different gifts. If our gift is preaching, let us preach to the limit of our vision. If it is serving others, let us concentrate our service. If it is teaching, let us give all we have to our teaching. And if our gift be the stimulating of the faith of others, let us set ourselves to it.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end of our announcements.
That's the end.
That's the end.
That's the end.
That's the end.
No more.
So, Joe, when do you feel closest to God?
I feel closest to God when I'm on stage ministering to people, because before we go on each night, before we go on the stage, we pray. And we usually bring somebody into our little circle, because we get in a little circle right backstage, right in the wings before we the one, whether it's at a, you know, in a big auditorium or a church setting or, you know, whatever the occasion is, we bring somebody in, and usually it's a non-believer, to tell you the truth, but we just grab the closest person and bring them into our group and say, we're going to pray with us. And so we pray for that our testimony will be anointed. We pray that this person that's with us will understand more what we're talking and singing about, and that that God will provide a platform for us tonight to reach people through our music, and he usually does. I mean, it's just a wonderful mm-hmm. thing. The songs we sing, and you know, it's the songs really, Ken. It's not our group. I mean, we're not as good as we used to be, of course, but and I realize that. But the songs are powerful. You know, the songs we sing, "He Touched Me" by Bill Gaither, the "Sweet Sweet Spirit," "How Great Thou Art." Those are very powerful songs. The message and the songs and the arrangements, and it's just it's powerful. And people, non-believers, and people who are, they've come to hear rock and roll, really. But we sing our gospel songs to them, and you know, there's not a dry eye in the house, and they usually give us a standing ovation, which is just unheard of, really. I mean, we're going, my goodness, what's going on? But it's, you know, it's the Lord. I mean, it really has to be.
Right.
And the songs are anointed, and I think as long as we keep. You know, we know why we're there, and we acknowledge why we're there, and I think God will continue to bless us in the music. I think so, and I'm looking forward to next year. Is going to be a big year for us, Ken. As I told you, next year is the 35th anniversary of Elvis's death, and every fan club in the world. It's going to have a major event next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm talking about in Brazil and Australia and Japan and, I mean, just all over the world. I mean, and there are huge fan clubs and huge following of Elvis. And we just look at it like it's an opportunity for us to sing our gospel music.
Sure.
It's not any other reason. But we're not going for any other reason, really. But that's it. And we're very, very blessed, really.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or seen an angel?
No, not personally. I haven't. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen an angel, or I haven't. You know, I... No, I haven't, just to answer your question.
No. What size church do you attend?
You know what? That's a good question. My wife, we live in Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And Nashville, Tennessee is I think, the headquarters for the Church of Christ. I don't know if you know anything about Church of Christ. They don't use instruments in the church. But they're very fundamental Christians, and they preach, you know. So I've been going to church with my wife, who is a Church of Christ lady, and we've been married 27 years, and I've been going to church with her, and it's a big church. It's one of the bigger Church of Christ.
Oh.
And I would say, you know, there's probably you know, I was going to say, there's a lot more people on the roster that attend, you know. as is the case in most churches, isn't it?
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
So what drives you crazy about Christians?
You know what drives me crazy? The hypocrisy. And I just, you know, it seems so obvious to me that, you know, why it's better to be a Christian. But the hypocrites and the people that pretend to be something that they're not, I just, you know, it's just very annoying. And as I get older, I'm more outspoken. My wife tells me now that I'm mean. And but I don't know. I just am very, I'm very outspoken about how my feelings and about my my true feelings. I just, I express myself. I'm not afraid to say it, yeah.
Are there things that you can do now that you couldn't do as a child?
There's some things I can't do.
Did you grow up with lots of do's and don'ts?
Well, not really. I mean, my parents were strict, yes. My parents were very strict. And by that I mean, you know, man, when we were growing up, we couldn't go to the movies. You know, we couldn't go to the dances, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember, to tell you the truth, we're Italian, and I was our little community up there in New York were, you know, all Italian, and most of the Italians were Catholic.
Right.
And so when I was in high school, I had a Catholic girlfriend. Well, my dad just said, well, don't bring her to the house. I mean, he was very strict, and if I wasn't going to play the piano in church, he didn't want me playing any secular music either. And I remember one time I was going to grow a beard, and he wouldn't let me go to church if he said, you better shave before you come to church, young man. So I guess now that my dad is gone, and, you know, I have the freedom to make my own mistakes if I want to without my dad telling me. But no, there's not a lot of difference, really.
Well, Joe wonders what I'm going to ask next. It's time for the offering. Actually, it's just a chance to thank you for your generosity. People have donated their time and talent for this project, so I'm taking this moment just to say thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Joe, has God put a particular issue or cause on your heart?
Well, you know what? There's not an issue, but there are several causes. I'm real, my heart goes out to people that are not as fortunate as we are and not as blessed. And I think as Christians that we need to be more, we need to give back more. I feel like whenever the opportunity comes up for us to do a charitable thing or to do a benefit for somebody, that we should offer our talent and to be more to be more involved in the community, because I think God uses a lot of different ways to work in people's lives, and I think it's really important that we should take advantage of some of these opportunities. And to be honest, Ken, I don't know when an opportunity knocks. Is this God opening the door? Is this an opportunity that he sent our way? I mean, if you're a Christian, you have to believe that these things are coming your way, because I think God is sending them. So, I mean, I just have a difficult time turning my back on some of these things, really. And so I do a lot more than, but they say, well, you should learn to say no. Well, I don't say no a lot. It's easier for me to say yes. And to tell you the truth, I enjoy it. I like people, and I like to be helpful, and God has blessed me, and I don't mind telling them, and I use every opportunity to tell people that I'm so blessed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I'm supposed to do. So that's what I'm going to do, brother.
What's the one practical thing Christians could do to improve the world?
Well, I think love one another.
Mm-hmm.
I to tell you the truth, I live in a complex where there are 14 individual units. And it's a very nice area here in Nashville. But to tell you the truth, I don't even know all my neighbors, you know? And I'm just wondering if that's my fault or if it's their fault or if I'm supposed to go knock on the door and introduce myself. But, I mean, I don't think we love each other enough, and I don't think we're willing enough, because there's so much going on in this world that we can help be more helpful with. if we would, but I think people are just afraid to give themselves and their time. So I think love one another is would be a good start, really.
Yep. Do you have a favorite Bible verse?
Well, yeah, probably Romans 8:28. Yeah. You know, I like 2 Corinthians. It's my favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
The New Testament is just is so beautiful, and the Psalms, and there's just so many beautiful passages in the Bible. The poetry is I just wonder why more music hasn't been set to more of those words, really.
Aside from the Bible, is there a book that you'd recommend for a new Christian?
Yeah, I have a devotional book that I read out of every morning, you know, that a lot of people do. And it's so easy because you just turn the page and it's the next day and you read whatever's there, you know. But I find it also interesting, and it's also new. And it's these books, and I have a different one each year, and you go through them, and to tell you the truth, they're repetitive in a way, but in a way, they're brand new. You know, and I told somebody, I said, my dad, I heard the same sermons all my life, and I know all, you know, I know all the stories in the Bible and all that, but, you know, it when you can tell it in a way that grabs your attention and that you're not, you know, off thinking about something else, I think that's important, too, and it's a challenge to all of us to be able to present the word in a way that's more interesting, I think.
I want to thank Joe for joining me today. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Ken. I enjoyed it. God bless all of you out there, and thanks for calling.
He's handsome, glorious, so beautifully victorious, almost unbelievable, completely inconceivable, astoundingly divine, wonderfully sublime, incredibly, delightfully, stupendously, abundantly, emphatically, eternally, fantastically, remarkably, good news!
We've got good news for people in trouble, good news for people in pain, we've got good news for everybody, good news. Jesus is alive. Good news, Jesus is alive. Good news, Jesus is alive. Alive, alive, alive. Good news, Jesus is alive.